Radio.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. This is our Christmas edition going out on the 25th of December. So Merry Christmas to all the listeners out there. As always, I'm joined by Mr. Dennis Wise, the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. Merry Christmas, Dennis.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you, Sven, and all your followers and listeners out there. All the best.
And we thought today, well, thank you for that, Dennis. We thought today what we would do is have a look back at our old podcasts that we've done this year, all of them from the very start of Truth Without Radio, which continued after Behind the Reich, which was where we were looking behind the scenes of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. And then we thought with Truth Without Radio, because we went through all the documentary series, we thought we'd have a look at communism by the back door and also current events and basically get a bit of an insight into your thinking, Dennis, really, and what inspires you to make these documentaries that you make. And the first episode that we looked at, we were discussing Aleister Crowley and Freemasonry. And this became a bit of a theme right the way through the whole series so far, hasn't it, Dennis, really? Aleister Crowley.
This guy, who's not my favorite person, does tend to keep cropping up through the series for reasons, because he's got these followers in Hollywood and in the music business and probably beyond. So yeah, he's like I said, he's probably one of the most disgusting persons ever to walk this planet, but he does keep cropping up, so I've got to keep mentioning him.
Well, they always name-check him, don't they? I mean, right the way through from the Beatles, putting him on the cover of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Heart Club's band. And Jimmy Page buying a mansion that he used to live in. I mean, this guy was talking about, you know, raping goats and raping animals and pedophilia. And he came up with this new law, which was do as thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. So just do whatever the individual wants to do, which is pretty much how everything's turned out now. I mean, people just have no concern whatsoever for the nation, for their community. They just think, well, if it's okay for me, if I want to do it, then I'll just take it and I'll do it. Just pure hedonism. And basically, he was the sort of godfather of it all. A really, really evil personality. And yet, we've got so many of our celebrities that just think that he's, you know, a real hero. And they promote what he says, what he did. He conjured up demons, apparently, and they inspired him and told him what to do. And he was also the head of Freemasonry. He went through all the different Freemasonic rites. And the Ordo Templi Orientis, the Otto, or the OTO, is apparently the secret head of all Freemasonry. Because they've done all the rites, basically, that you have to do with Freemasonry. So it's
strange, because a lot of Freemasons tend to say that he was not a Freemason, which I don't believe for one minute. He was the most decorated Freemason that I know. But having said that, the OTO, I mean, if you look at what the OTO practice, and I mentioned it in the part in the one of the parts in the series, and what they get up to is similar to what is rumored coming out of Hollywood. I mean, I couldn't really believe at one time when I heard that they actually ate excrement in Hollywood, and you think to yourself, can't be right. But then when you look what the OTO do, they actually advertise the fact that that is what they do. So any followers of the OTO in Hollywood will do exactly what, you know, the OTO actually do, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's just basically depravity. Who can be the most depraved and disgusting and take it the furthest be the most degenerate. And, I mean, that led us on to the next episode as well, which was called Black Magic and Buggery. And this was specifically about Hollywood and the music industry and the way that these actors are forced to wear a dress where they demean them. And demasculinize them, emasculate them. And I think you had some clips of them saying that, some actors saying that they were never going to wear a dress. And then the next clip, sure enough, they're wearing a dress.
Well, that was a difficult episode, that, because I think I mentioned before that I was going to do it at a certain time, maybe 4 or 5. But because of the difficulty of proving such matters, I found that I had to wait a little bit longer. Probably came out about 8 or 9, but eventually I got enough footage to put a thing together. I mean, you know, I honestly believe there's more goes on than what I suggested, but what I showed, I could actually say was more or less correct, because either John Travolta just been to court and verified a few things, or, you know, the fact that I had footage of these people wearing dresses, which was significant to that episode, because a lot of people were quite shocked at the number of people and the certain people who wore these dresses. And like, you're quite right in saying that one or two said that they never would do. But then when it comes to signing this $20 million contract, it wasn't that difficult for them to change their mind.
Well, this has also been a sort of a theme for 2015, hasn't it? Men wearing dresses and pushing this transsexual thing. It's been in all the soap operas over here in Britain that there's been these transsexual characters that suddenly decided that they're really women.
Last night, actually, on the presentation of the Personality of the Year on the BBC, Eddie, he was there dressed as a woman, you know, another transgender, and nobody batted an eyelid. So,
it's more than that. They're showing children. They've had programs on the mornings on the BBC where they've been showing these 6-7-year-old children that they're claiming are actually a different sex. They've got a young boy that they've dressed up in a dress that they're encouraging to think that he's a girl. And the promotion of, I forget his name, that guy in America that was on the cover of Vogue.
The athlete. I think it was an Olympic athlete who changed into a sex change into a woman, didn't he? I can't remember his name myself, to be honest.
And the boxer,
I think,
as
was
well.
The Kardashians. Sorry?
That boxer, the British boxer.
Oh, yeah, no, the boxing promoter.
Yeah, just the most bizarre people that you wouldn't expect. And when you see this boxing promoter, he's drugged up to his eyeballs. Really, really drugged out of his brains. Really slow and slurring and not, you know, not all there. Really not all there.
Yeah, well, they rushed him on to Big Brother as well at the time, because he came out of the closet, so to speak, only a couple of weeks before. They kind of rushed him on there. Probably to try and get him, put him in a better light, but I don't think it worked, to be honest. People found it confusing, even on Big Brother.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, he's got a family as well. He's got children. They've got to put up with their dad claiming to be a woman or a different person entirely in a man's skin. It's just absolutely insane when you think that they're just such a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of the population, and yet everything is everything is supposed to be changed to accommodate them. We're supposed to change our bathrooms so that men can go into the women's toilets, into the women's bathrooms, and vice versa. Yeah. And they want that in schools as well. So you've got young girls that are just changing into adults, and they want to allow boys into this to go in there, saying, "Well, I'm really a girl, so I should be allowed in." You know, it's absolutely crazy. The invasion of privacy that's involved in this, people just don't seem to care about it because they've been told it's such a great thing. Then,
yeah, well, if you complain, then, you know, you get the wrath of the, you know, the culture, the culturist Marxists on your back.
Well, you're accused of being homophobic if you complain, and this is another theme that we've been talking about all the way through the series, is that our position is the central position. You know, we're not the extremists. They are the extremists. We are promoting the normal position of man and a woman and wanting to preserve your people, which is just the basic natural normal center position.
Ground. That is the center ground,
that everyone has had.
Yeah, anything else, like when they're warping children to do anal sex at 10 years old in school education, or, you know, bringing out these silly laws where all extreme, but they paint it as if it's we're the extremists and they are the ones in the centre ground, which is totally ridiculous.
Well, they are the extremists, and again, as we pointed out in the series, this isn't the first time this has happened. You know, the communists in Germany, when they first took over Germany, they were pushing this. They were pushing for incest and pedophilia and to lower the age of consent in Weimar Germany. So everything that happened in Weimar Germany is all over Europe now and all over America, because the same people that were doing that in Germany, once Hitler took power, they moved to America. And they started it all off over there. And that's also where you get the cultural Marxism from. But we'll get back to these podcasts. The one after that, June the 19th, this was Druids, Templars, and Jews. And,
This is the one where I upset more people than on the most of the episodes, where I said that the Druids were the Celts, and they actually were in Ireland as well. And some people kind of fell out with me over that point, but
yeah, there's a bit of a controversy there with the Druids, because these modern day Druids that are to do with the Freemasons and the Jews, and you're tracing it back to the Jews, and the Jews were. You can trace them back to Babylon, but the Jews didn't come into Britain until 1066, and the Druids were in Britain for 1,000 years before Christ. And the British civilization was a very advanced civilization. They had universities, hospitals. People would study for 10, 20 years at these universities, and it would be all the aristocracies and the noble class from all across Gaul would study in Britain. And they had all these universities. So it was a totally different thing to the Freemasons. these Freemasons calling themselves Druids today and nothing at all to do with it.
It linked up to the Bohemian Club over in America as well, where they have these homosexual gatherings every year as well. They were a gathering of Druids, from what I could gather, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they call themselves it. Basically, there isn't that much information about the Druids. We've got what the bards, when they became Christian, they started writing things down, because before then they weren't supposed to write anything down, only business transactions. So once they became Christian, the Druids became Christian, they started writing things down. So we have the triads, and we have some things written down from that time. But as far as their rituals are concerned, we don't know much about it. And in the 17th and the 18th century, there was a resurgence of interest in them. And you got these Freemasonic types that just created new rituals and guessed and channeled what they thought was the Druids and what the Druids were doing. And they invented a whole new framework that they called Druidry. And that's these modern day Druids. And that's what the Freemasons follow. And that would be what the Bohemian Grove are involved with. So they're really just smearing the name of the Druids, because the Druids, they have one of
they've
their
done that before, haven't they?
Yeah, well, well one of their
stolen names.
They were waiting for one of their gods was called Jesus. They had a Trinity, and they were waiting for one that was called Yesu. So the British people never actually changed the name of their god. So it was a very smooth transition from Druidry to Christianity. And the Archdruids became the archbishops, and this was in the second century, about 170 AD. So this is all history that most people aren't aware of, because you get the Freemasonic history, and you get told, oh well, they were human, they sacrificed humans, but they'd never found any human remains, and the only person to write that was Julius Caesar. And Julius Caesar was at war with Britain at the time, so it was like hate propaganda against the British, and he was also persecuting the Christians. So Druids and Christians were the enemy of the Roman Empire, and both religions were legal in Britain. So that's why you had this early flowering of Christianity in Britain, and also obviously you had the Druids there because the universities were based there. So it's two different things. You've always got to look really carefully at this sort of stuff, because so much of history is being told to us by Freemasons, and today it's just blatantly told to us by Jews. You know, you'll get Christian, you get Christian history programs on the BBC talking about the history of the church presented by a Jew.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
No, should be completely excluded from the church. After this one, we were June the 27th. we were answered some questions that have been put in the chat room, I think, or in the comment section. And this was on, was Hitler funded by the bankers? And this is something that comes up a lot, isn't it?
In my opinion, it's yet another attempt to denounce the fact that the National Socialists had an alternative to the debt-based financial system that the Jews use. The fact of the matter is, I mean, it doesn't take much of intelligence to work out that when the Spanish Civil War, for instance, was going on, you know, the great danger to the Catholic Church at that time was communism, and Catholics in Spain suffered nuns raped and killed, priests killed, and churches burnt down. And Hitler saved Spain, to be fair, by supplying the Luftwaffe to Franco with his army stranded in North Africa, flew them over to Spain to eventually could put down this communist revolution. So when you bear that in mind, that's 1936. When war breaks out in 39, and Hitler then takes on the protector of Europe, under that umbrella comes the Vatican as well, because the last thing that the Vatican need is Bolsheviks storming all over Europe. And this is what Hitler did, and it doesn't take a genius, you know, to say that, you know, if Hitler needed a few million, the Vatican could certainly supply it. Although, you know, it's not actually written down anywhere. It doesn't take a lot to say that, you know, they wouldn't be moved to do such a thing. So I don't think at any time did Hitler struggle for money when, as long as he was protecting the Vatican, and he did do a deal with the Vatican to say that he would protect him.
Well, why would the bankers be funding Hitler to then speak out against the banks?
Well, this, you know, they always say that every war is funded by the Rothschilds, and he funds both sides. You know, they don't think for one minute that communism was a threat to Europe from immediately after World War One, and all the way through that time, Germany was fighting an attempted communist takeover. In fact, they took over for 2 or 3 days, but were eventually wiped out. But all that time, right up to Hitler winning the election, there was a conservative attack of communism trying to get to power. And so when Hitler finally did get to power, that was the final put down of him. They put many in these camps, obviously. But this was a continuing underground war since World War One, and people are trying to convince other people that the people that actually funded the Bolsheviks with the same people what funded the National Socialists, which again is ridiculous, because when you think of what has happened since, in Russia, the white Christians, there was hundreds, well, there was millions and millions killed by the Bolsheviks. The only difference was then that they moved into Germany in World War II and killed more Christians by the millions. And now they're in America. You know, the day is going to dawn on Americans that they're going to be the next Christians to be thrown into FEMA camps and gulags. So it's just a continuation. And to say that the bankers actually funded National Socialists is about as ridiculous as you can get. But these books come out and people believe them.
Yeah, I mean, a large part of the program of the National Socialists was to get rid of usury. That was a stated aim, to get rid of this, this having interest on everything. And when they took over the banks, that's what they did. They funded, these works that needed doing, like houses that needed being built, roads that needed to be built. And they funded that with loans to the people without interest on them. And with the houses, the more children you had, for each child you had, 25% got taken off the price of a house. Right. And it was because of this that the war started, because they had cut the banks out, and they cut the middlemen out as well. When they were trading with other countries, they just traded, bartered.
Well, in one particular episode, I have what I call a honourable Jew, and there are one or two honourable Jews, and that was Mr. Friedman, Benjamin Friedman, explained totally, you know, the situation about the Jews in Germany, who had been welcome to Germany beforehand, but had stabbed Germany in the back during World War One. But then the Germans only turned on them when finally, after Hitler came to power and, you know, got rid of the Jews in prominent positions, when international Jewry then had this conference in Switzerland, decided to give Germany an ultimatum to say, get rid of Adolf Hitler and put every communist back into power again, or we will declare war on you. And this Untermetter went over to America and gave the actual speech live on American radio to say that we are now declaring a holy war against Germany. And that's all historical fact. Nothing to do with being funded by a banker. The Jews declared war on them in 33.
We also got the films that they made that were against the Rothschilds and against the bankers, showing how the banking system started and how it was started up by the Rothschilds and how they took over Britain by fixing the results from Waterloo and buying up all the shares on the stock exchange. And when they did, when they went into France, they took over the Rothschilds building, turned it into a welfare centre, and put the Rothschilds themselves in the work camps. One of them was put in a work camp, wasn't they?
Well, that's true. But even before the war started, when he went into Austria, when people say he went in, conquering Austria was about as ridiculous as you can get, when a 99.7 vote with Austria wanted to rejoin with Germany again. And when he went into Austria, he actually arrested the Rothschild banker there. And, I think it was something like, it's still a record fee today for a single person, you know, to be bailed out. I think it's 200 million the, Rothschilds paid for him, you know, for that price today for his release. So, cause Hitler actually called him like, you know, a thief. And this money all went back into where it once belonged. So yeah, he had no love for the Rothschilds whatsoever.
Well, this was the main thing that separated National Socialism from communism. Was the National Socialists pointed out that the reason why these Jews had the money was purely and simply because of interest, and there is no way that the interest is actually there in the system. You have to take out more loans in order for there to be enough currency in the system to pay back the previous loans. Whereas Marxism just pointed out that there were these rich capitalists who had lots more money than the poor people, so the poor people should go and steal it back from them. It didn't point out that it actually came from interest. So it was just trying to encourage envy among the people and get them to attack their own people in the class war. Whereas what National Socialism was about was cooperation between the classes. And the rest of the world were terrified that this was going to take off throughout the rest of Europe, because, you know, Britain wouldn't allow these German boats to dock in British waters because they were terrified that the British people would see how well treated the German workers were. They were terrified of this banking system.
I'm pretty sure that if you abolished usury in the United States and in the United Kingdom, you know, and stopped giving this money of billions every day to Israel, you would soon see a country turning like Germany did in Europe. You know, I mean, from being on the brink again of bankruptcy now, America, it would turn within a matter of a year. You know, things would be completely turned around, just as it was in Germany, and just by simply abolishing this debt-ridden financial-based usury.
Well, they did. They went from the nation being pretty much all finished, 6 million or so out of work, no way to possibly increase the work. You had the Great Depression in America. America was in depression. Britain wasn't doing very well. You know, it was all falling apart. The German people were having to prostitute themselves. They were starving, dead bodies in the streets. And yet, within the space of a year, 2 years, suddenly they were all back to work and happy and building roads and inventing new cars, the Volkswagen for the workers. It was quite incredible. A miracle, the economic miracle is what it was. So you can see why the rest of the world, under the instruction of the Jews, decided that they were going to have to stop this and go to war. And I think there's a quote of Winston Churchill that says that if only Hitler would go back to the gold standard, then the war would end. Because that's what they wanted, to go back to the gold standard rather than producing the money that you needed.
Well, the system we live in today, most people think that you know, a bank can't exist without usury. You know, you'll say to somebody like, you know, that they shouldn't be able to charge interest, and they will look puzzled at you because they don't understand. Because, but in these countries, you know, in the Muslim countries, they just charge a fee. They don't have a system where this money keeps multiplying and multiplying and multiplying till an endless life of debt. So, you know, the banks tomorrow just, if you abolish the usury and say, look, you just charge a flat fee for your, you know, for your work, you would soon see the country, and if that money was channeled right, you would soon see the country up and happy and back to where we were, you know, in Germany in 1933.
Well, we never used to have interest on loans until the Jews actually came into Europe. The idea of putting interest onto a loan just wouldn't have entered people's heads, because that meant that you were taking something from the community that you hadn't lent out. You know, if you lend out a coat to somebody, you don't expect a coat and a pair of trousers back. You just expect the coat back. And that was the way things were done. And if it was a business, if you had a business deal and you lent out some money for a business deal, you would say, oh, well, the profits from it, I'll get a third of them and you get two thirds of them. And if there were no profits, neither of you got any. The person that lent the money out just saw that as being, well, there's been an accident has happened, I'm not going to get any money. Whereas today, with the system we have today, you still have to pay that money back, regardless of whether you've made a profit or not.
It pays. That's right. When a bank lends you money, they're hoping you can't pay them back, so the price of the interest goes up. And that's a ridiculous way of doing business.
And they don't take any risks whatsoever when they actually make exactly. that money. They just produce it. They just take no risks whatsoever. So it's really just going back to the old system that we had before the Jews interfered with it. And that's what Hitler was doing. Again, taking it back to natural law, taking it back to the way things used to be. But after that, the next episode we had after that was July the 5th. And this was the great YouTube apocalypse. when all your videos suddenly disappeared overnight, Dennis.
Well, it was something I've been expecting for a long time, even while I was doing the documentary. I think I kind of blindsided them because they didn't expect anything like that appearing on YouTube. And I was just glad to get the last episode out when I did. And then after that, it was just a matter of time. And like you say, on that particular day, everybody who went onto YouTube to look at Adolf Hitler World, you know, the greatest story never told, episode, whoever had put it up, different, you know, many, many people had uploaded it, suddenly found there was no sound.
Yeah, so that was the excuse that they used, wasn't it? Was that you were taking the copyright with the music, which is ridiculous.
Because I can show you many examples on YouTube of music being used in various documentaries and other forms as well, which, you know, by their standard of what they said to us about copyright, that applied as well. But them videos stay up. No, this was a political decision. And I'm sure the people who've seen it and understood it know why.
Well, they've been removed again since then as well. I mean, this has happened a few times, but I noticed today that they seem to be back up there. You've found a solution. Is that right?
Well, there's people do keep uploading. As soon as they take it up, people do upload again. So it's just a question of will, really. I mean, last time I saw, it was only last week, there was one up there with all the episodes and all the soundtrack. So, you know.
So if people do see that they've been removed, upload them again, basically.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure because, you know, many people have actually got the DVD and have got the ability to be able to rip them and put them back up there. So no doubt to YouTube's annoyance, you know, they still have to look for them. But such is the documentary that, well, really, I mean, if anybody really wants to know about World War II, they've got to watch that documentary anyway, because it's probably one of the most informative, especially the hidden side of it as well, whether you believe the end product or not. But the fact is that these documentaries, what have been coming out of Hollywood and BBC and all the others for years, are just one-sided, biased reports, where this does balance things out a bit. Even, you know, you can research it, people who don't actually, you know, like Hitler, you will see that this can be researched and found to be true. So, you know, it's never going to go away in my eyes.
Well, it's one of the most moving documentaries ever made. I think you get quite emotional watching it. I think most people that watch it will be moved to tears at some points. You know, it's very, very moving, very, very emotional. And it's touched a lot of people, Dennis. It really has. It's changed a lot of people's lives. A lot of people's lives.
Oh, yeah.
I had people say to me, you know, the most unlikely people have been moved so much by your documentary, and they've become some of the most dedicated nationalists that there are, some of the most useful people we have in the movement after watching your documentary.
Well, I think what it shows is what we lost. That's when it really hits home, because it was there and a better life for all. And you know, when you look around what we've got today, when you watch that documentary, you then realize why we've got us, what we've got around us today. And that to me is one of the most moving bits, because, you know, everything that is going on today. I mean, I listed a few things in Part 24, which I felt that, Hitler had done anyway, you know, before then. And I listed quite a number of things what wouldn't be around today, which are causing such distress to other people in other countries. And once you realize that, and that National Socialism was actually bombed back into the Stone Age for that particular reason, then that is the emotional bit. We had it. It was there, and then we lost it.
Yeah, it's realizing what we actually lost, and looking back at that time when you just looking back and seeing all these white faces that you just don't see anymore. Did they really know just what they had? I mean, in the rest of Europe, just what they had in being a homogenous nation and not having the third world mingled in with them. Did they realize it, just how important it was that they kept their race pure?
I was just going to say, I touched on something there, because at the moment I'm still working on Part 13, and at the moment I've got a clip in there of V-Day of in London, when everybody's celebrating, and obviously that time in 1945 they're all celebrating World War II. They think they've won the victory, and yet only 70 years later, that crowd now is not the same crowd. That crowd now is a different colour.
And this is just it. It's like when they have the poppy appeal this year, and it showed you a soldier from the First World War, and he was white, and it said, and then it said, and this is the injured soldier of the future, and he was black. Right, as if it was saying, this is what's happening. We are replacing you with the Third World, whether you like it or not. And that's it.
So
they are taking up
World War II then.
Yeah, well, this is it. This is, again, this is another thing that we've been pointing out, is that we actually lost the war. White people lost the war. It was the Jews that won the war, not Britain. It certainly wasn't Britain that won. It wasn't America. It was the Jews that won. And you only have to look around Britain and America and Europe today to see the effects of it, and see just what these Jews have done to us. And that brings us to the next episode. July the 11th, the world's worst Jew. We got asked whether we could work out who was the world's worst Jew.
I've thought about it since. It's got to be one of the Bolsheviks, you know, because they were probably the most murderous political ideology that the world's ever known, and the leaders, you know, Lenin and you know, the Jews in that particular quarter have got to be up there, because it's not been really recorded in our history books, but, you know, they were what they were, and they were evil.
I think the main one was, I think it was Gingrich Yagoda, the head of the Cheka. Mm-hmm. The Jewish head of the Cheka that killed, I forget the number, but just individually, he himself was responsible for killing so many people, all white people, and torturing them to death. These tortures that these Jews come up with, that they say that the Germans did, they're actually tortures that the Jews did on the whites in Russia.
Yeah. Yeah, they nail them to a tree, a pregnant woman to a tree, and pull her insides out and wrap it around a tree, and just disgusting things like that. Just didn't bear thinking of, you know.
Absolutely horrific things that just wouldn't enter into the mind of a white person. And I think one of the topics of conversation that came up in that was, is there a good Jew? And you brought up Benjamin Friedman.
Well, Benjamin Freedom, I thought, Aaron Russo enlightened us to quite a lot of what was going on, you know, in the Federal Reserve. There's been one or two which we aren't them shedding any light on the subject, you know, especially Freedman. We've got to be grateful for, I think.
Well, I think you should be grateful for them. But the thing is, even if you do have a good one, what about their ancestors? What about their descendants? Okay, how do we know that? How do we know that Benjamin Friedman's offspring, his children, his grandchildren, haven't done things that are harmful to us?
No, that's true. But if you're asking me for a name, I've got to give you his, you know.
Yeah. I mean, he has been helpful to us, but I think you have to look at them as the way that they act as a whole, as a unit, because even if you do get exceptions to the rule, which, you know, might be okay, like Benjamin Freedman, there are others that have been helpful to us, but they are exceptions to the rule. It doesn't mean that we should allow the Jews into our nations, because as a unit, as a whole, sure, they're harmful to us, and they have been.
Well, that's what they do best, isn't it? They'll come into a nation and be welcomed into a nation, and then by, you know, a certain number of decades, they've infiltrated the certain positions of power and actually run the countries, which is exactly what's going on today in France and the UK and the US, which exactly went on in Germany. That's why they've been kicked out of over 100 countries throughout history.
Benjamin Friedman's description of what went on in Germany and how they were welcomed in Germany is one of the best that I've heard. It is a very good one. It's available at Aaron Bootlegs at WordPress.com, which is our bootleg site. Now, after that was July the 18th and Israel and the war against Christianity. And I believe this was in reference to one of the parts of communism by the back door, Dennis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Israel, obviously, because of, they only get away with it because, number one, obviously communism won World War II. And so, the coming of Israel allied with the UK and the US and all the other, Jew-led nations involved in World War II. So, they get away with it today because all the media is owned by the Jews and all the publishers is owned by the Jews and everything else is owned by the Jews. I know people, you know, can mock that statement, but it doesn't take much research to find that out. And so the crime against the Palestinian is minimized because obviously it just isn't shown. I mean, it's been going on there for over 30, 40 years, whatever. And what they do is, it goes on every day, killing children and women. And these Palestinians who are clinging onto the land are being slowly but surely pushed off it. But the world really ignores it. But that's probably because of World War II again, because the side what would have won world would have won World War II is Israel would not have existed anyway. So that's just another one, you know, because of that defeat.
Yeah, the terrorist state that was put in place, and people would say, well, Hitler helped to move the Jews to Israel and helped with the birth of Israel. Yeah. But that was only not as a sovereign nation. That was supposed to be administered by the British. They were never meant to have a sovereign nation there. Hitler warned against what would happen if the Jews were allowed to have their own country rather than having it ruled by somebody else. And everything he said would happen has come true. It has become a criminal bolt hole. So whenever these Jews get caught committing crimes in the nations that they're embedded in, they just flee to Israel, which has got no extradition treaty with anywhere else in the world. And when you say about the media, I mean, one of the ways they do it, whenever a Jew gets killed, they'll give you the name of the Jew, how old the Jew was, what his profession was. They'll interview all the people that have been left behind. But when there's a Palestinian killed, they'll just give you a number. They won't try to humanize the victim in any way whatsoever. They will always try to minimize it. And because of what they claim was done to them in the war, this is the other reason that they say, you know, Israel's got to be allowed to defend itself because of how terrible it was treated in the war.
Yeah.
Because this is what Ahmadinejad said was, well, just because the Jews say they were Holocausted, why have the Palestinians got to pay for that? Why are the Palestinians being punished?
Although Netanyahu tried to blame that on the Palestinians not long back, if you remember.
Yeah, that's quite funny.
He said the Palestinians were persuading Hitler to do it.
Yeah, so Netanyahu, the Holocaust denier, the World War II revisionist scholar, Netanyahu. You're not allowed to question the dogma, are you? But apparently you can do.
Yeah, well, put a bit of stick over that from German, wouldn't
you? Yeah, well, you can question the dogma if you're a Jew.
I think we should start calling Germany occupied Germany, because I think people forget they are still occupied.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm occupied Germany from now on.
They have been occupied ever since the war. And when that wall came down, when the Berlin Wall came down, the Russian side, or the side that had been under the Soviets, was no longer split from the side that was under America, and the Soviets fell apart, but the American side is still there. The Americans never released their hold over Germany, and they had a hold over the other half of it.
Which is why when the NSA phone tapping, when Merkel came out, presumably angry at the US, where all the time, I believe that the UN ambassador would have called her in and said, you know, sit down and have a cup of tea and shut up, like, you know what I mean? Because she is one of their puppets, you know?
Total puppet. It's just a charade. It's like watching a scripted television show when they get angry at America, because they're subservient to America, and it's written into the law and into their constitution that they can only do what America tells them to do. They're not allowed to teach their own children. They have to be sent to the school.
That's the thing. I think she was playing up to the audience, pretending to be annoyed, but she couldn't have done a thing, and nothing has happened since.
Well, we're going to go into what Merkel's done in a bit, but just a final part to do with this section was the war against Christianity and why the Jews hate Christianity so much. I mean, this is another big feature of the series, has been just how much the Jews hate Christ and hate Christianity. And that goes back to them rejecting Christ as the Logos, as order. So they, because they had rejected the order and the natural law, they then became the agents of disorder and chaos, which is what they've brought to all our nations. And this war, people say, or people that are against Christianity will say, well, this is a war against the white race. But a war against Christianity is embedded right into the very religion of Judaism itself, is hatred of Christianity. So much that they won't even use the multiplication sign. They'll just use a T because they don't want to see the hated cross there. When they walk past churches, they have to curse. If they see a crucifix, they're supposed to spit on it and in some cases urinate on it. And of course, we've seen that supposed piece of art, Piss Christ, a crucifix dipped in a bucket of urine, which is straight out of the Talmud. That's what they're supposed to do, desecrate crucifixes.
I believe they're also abolishing the Anno Domini and BC on the dates as well. I believe they're using another term. I think I can't remember what the term is now, but
Common Era.
Because of before Christ and after Christ, they're not going to use that. They don't want to use it.
Yeah, the Common Era and before the Common Era. And in the last podcast we did, we were talking about the way that they're attacking Christmas. And all of that comes just from this hatred that they have for Christ and the way that they talk about him in their Talmud. And a lot of people go along with it. They'll repeat the lies that are in the Talmud as if that's the truth. And that's what really happened with Jesus, who was born from a Roman. His mother was a hairdresser, stroke whore, basically. That he's boiling in a vat of excrement. That he was an Egyptian magician is one of the bits from the Talmud. And yet you hear all these bits. They filter their way in to the alternative movement. And the alternative people, the truther crowd, will then say, oh, well, Jesus's mother was really a hairdresser. She wasn't a virgin. And his mother was his father was a Roman. Oh, and he was really an Egyptian magician. And that's where it all comes from. It's from the Talmud. And also the Gnostic books.
Hollywood will make a version of the Bible.
Well, you get these. They promote these Gnostic Gospels, and a lot of them were written by the Jews as well. It was written against them way back in the second century, saying that these Gnostic books were written by Jews and that they're all heretical and they've been deliberately written just to undermine Christianity. And yet,
well, I believe this latest X-Men movie, what's coming out, is God is the bad guy.
Well, that doesn't surprise me at all. Everything's been turned on its head. And we pointed out in a few of these about these movies that have come out where they've turned them on their heads, and you've got these politically correct fairy tales. I'm just trying to look here which one it was. It was in the YouTube apocalypse. You were talking about Sleeping Beauty and the way that that's been turned around. And
the horned... Brad Pitt's wife, can't remember her name, but she starred in that. It was a remake, a Disney remake, and just an abortion of a film, to be honest. I mean, how they can twist things, I really don't know.
And they turned, I think they turned the prince into the witch. This is...
Well, the Sleeping Beauty was brought around by a kiss from a woman.
Well, there you go. There you go. They've got to fit it in everywhere, haven't they? They've got to fit in this political correctness, feminism, race mixing in the new Star Wars. I mean, that's just horrific. I mean, they've cast a real ape-looking creature in the lead with a white woman. It's obvious what they're trying to do with this Jew director, Juju Abrams. And, of course, all the Jewish film reviewers are giving it 10 out of 10. Saying how wonderful it is, but if you actually look at the a Gentile review of it, it will tell you that it's just a complete rehash of the original one. Pretty much. Well,
someone mentioned what looked like a Nazi rally in there, made the impression that it was a Nazi rally. I haven't seen the movie. In fact, I haven't seen any of the Star Wars. I never liked it when it first came out, but. Doesn't surprise me at all, because we all know what Hollywood is. It's a propaganda machine, isn't it?
Well, that's just really predictable that they're going to try and emulate National Socialist Rally. They've always tried to make out that the stormtroopers were Nazis. I mean, it's quite clear they're going to do that. But the next podcast we did, this was a bit of a turning point, this one. This was called The Swarm of Black Locusts. And this was when the Channel Tunnel was closed up. The whole of the county of Kent was shut down, and we were having this massive invasion into Britain of the Third World and into Germany. And you had Merkel saying that Germany was going to welcome all the immigrants, as many as could come, they would let in, and then tried to force the rest of Europe to accept it.
Thousands of young men of fighting age from Africa were on the borders all piling in and being welcomed by the Germans, who had been brainwashed at schools into accepting that everybody is equal in this world. And it's such a crazy, crazy plan. And then suddenly you get, the ISIS threatening to cause terror in Europe. And, just for Merkel to do such a thing was highest point of treason one could ever get.
I mean, it's just, she seems to have so much hatred for the German people. I mean, she just wants to replace them all with Syrians and Turks and Bangladeshis and anyone else that can make their way over there. And the crimes that the crimes that these people are committing are really horrific. There was a young girl abducted and raped in the park. So many rapes that have happened over there that can be traced back to these immigrants. And yet she's now saying that the rest of Europe has got to accept a quota of these immigrants. And if they don't accept it, then she's going to take them to court and use the law against them.
Well, it is an agenda. It is an agenda. That's why, even after Paris shootings, still some of the countries didn't close the borders. So it is obvious that this is, the long-term point is to wipe out the white race, not only in Europe, though, but it'll come in America as well. They'll probably use Islam the same as they have in Europe, because I heard Obama talking not long back saying that America will never be at war with Islam. Ha, ha, ha.
Well, it took 150 people, 150 young people to get shot before they would actually close the border. And even then, they only closed the border for a couple of days. And that was closing out after the horses bolted. In France. What's the point in closing it then?
That's 150 white people they wanted rid of anyway.
Well, that's it. It really is an agenda to get rid of white people. And I don't see how anybody could deny that when they see that this is what's going on. If you just look at London, 60% non-white. 60% of the white people have been ethnically cleansed from London. They're no longer there. Who knows where they are? They're certainly not in London. They haven't got that unique London character anymore. And the next generation of them that are born are not going to have a Cockney accent. They're not going to be recognisably London from London anymore. And London has been a city for over 2,000 years. So the white people have been living in London and been identifiable as Londoners by their accent for over 2,000 years. And
another word from no the more. Freemasons at Buckingham Palace.
Yeah, well, again, you know, you talk about this quite a lot, is the corruption of the monarchy and how they're linked with the Freemasons and the Jews.
That's right.
I mean, we've had treacherous traitors in the monarchy, really, since Oliver Cromwell. And before then, we had the odd good ones. But after Oliver Cromwell did away with the king and allowed the Jews back in, because they were deported. All of them were deported in 1290. And there was law made by the king never to let them in again.
Yeah.
But they did. They let them in thanks to Oliver Cromwell starting up his revolution. I mean, that was really the first Jewish instigated revolution. Now, after that, you had the French Revolution, which again was Freemasonic, and then the Bolshevik Revolution. They've all been instigated by the Jews, stirring the people up again and turning us against one another. And the most effective way of turning us against each other now is to fill the nations up with these foreign hordes. And call it a good thing. Diversity. How can diversity be good? How can division be good? And the liberals say, well, we mustn't let this divide us. But we already are divided. That's the whole point. That's what diversity is. It's division. It means you're divided. Yeah. You haven't got unity. We can't unite with the Muslims, because it's the Muslims that are at war with us. Even if it's only a small portion, it's still Muslims that are causing the problem. You know, this Donald Trump is quite right when he says they should be banning them all from America, because that's the only option that we really have if we want to be safe, is prevent them from coming in and get rid of the ones that are already here.
Like I said, that's not Obama's point of view, or the probably Clinton's neither. You know, the fact will be that they will let them in at some stage. I'm quite sure. I'm quite confident about that, because that is the weapon they're using in Europe successfully. So if it ain't broke, why fix it?
Well, after that, we was a bit of a continuation of this, really. We did Wish You Were Here at the Parasite Hotel. And that was where we were looking at what happens to the black invaders once they get into Britain, where they get put up in a hotel and the way they're pampered. Well, we've got white homeless on the streets. They're putting the blacks up in hotels that tourists had paid to go and stay in. And they would turn up at the hotel only to see that it was full of immigrants. And this is what...
The same in Germany, where working class families have been told to move out because some of the immigrants weren't happy with the accommodation that they were given. So they moved out, the working class families, and let in these African immigrants. Same thing's going on over there.
Now, it's happening all over Europe. I think it's probably at the worst stage that it could be in Germany, where they're telling the Germans that they've got to get out of their flats to make room for them. They haven't actually done that in Britain yet, but they're just putting them in the hotels. But there was a very positive bit of news the other day, where they tried doing that in Holland, and the people rioted. And you had the Muslims in the hall talking about taking over this place, and there were hundreds of white Dutch youth outside hurling things at it, and the police were shooting tear gas canisters at them, and the invaders were barricaded in this hall. I think the place was set fire to. Really, you know, serious resistance to the invasion.
I think Norway's had that same problem as well. In fact, I think in Sweden and Norway, the women are actually dyeing their hair from blonde to black because of the attraction they have to these African, you know, migrants.
Well, in Eritrea, if you rape a woman, there's no way that the police are going to come after you for it. That's just accepted. They just say, well, the woman shouldn't have been out on her own. It's not a crime. Rape is not a crime in Eritrea. And a lot of these immigrants are from Eritrea. and Somalia and all the surrounding areas, rape is just an accepted fact of life in Africa. And when they come here, they're used to seeing women covered from head to foot in burqas. They come here and you've got our white women wandering around in a bikini. Then, you know, they're just asking to be attacked by these monsters. And they should not be put in that position of risk. These creatures should not be allowed in our countries in the first place.
Yeah, well, the terms are the sentences that they're getting in Sweden at the moment, and deterrence anyway, you know, within a matter of, you know, 6 months, they're out after raping a Swedish girl. Not reported as Muslims are migrants raping. They're actually called Swedish men, but they're actually not. They're actually migrants. So it's a big cover-up, and it's a big... All this is, you know, the fact is it is an agenda, and these are little things that, you know, they'll cover up to make sure this agenda is eventually pulled off. And people have got to wise up, you know what I mean? And God forbid they ever take the guns off the Americans, because that will take them right back to 1917 in Russia.
Well, in Norway, where they hide the ethnicity of the rapists, they've started quietly doing this program where they're trying to teach the immigrants that it's not right to rape white people. And they've actually got a special class that they go to, and they're trying to teach them not to do this. And the way that they do this is to portray a white man as the rapist, and the Negro as being the good guy that says to the white man, oh, you shouldn't really be doing that. And the white man, in this lesson that they have, he drugs the woman and then rapes her. So what they're doing is showing to these blacks, look at evil whitey who rapes women. And this is their way of supposedly stopping the Negroes from raping whites. And what they've actually said, the objective of this class is to teach them right from wrong. So they don't even know right from wrong.
In the first place, that's the problem.
Well, yeah, they shouldn't be here.
They must have known.
Well, personally, I don't think they do have a moral compass. I don't think they do know good from evil, right from wrong. I think that's one of the things that separates white people from the other races. That's why we have these traits.
The people who went in must have known. I'm pretty sure that, you know, they're not uneducated people, these people in charge of these immigration policies, and they must know that if you're going to let in, you know, a million Somalians, it's going to be a problem. Your white women are going to face a problem.
It's deliberate. It's a deliberate agenda to replace our people. Oh. And it's also a deliberate agenda from the Jews, who rub their hands with glee when they see this happening. Whenever they see a chance to advocate for more immigrants, they will do it. And they will admit that. They will say in America, the most important thing for Jews in America is to push for more immigration and push for support to Israel. Those two subjects are the most important things for the Jews in America. And that was the head of a large Jewish organization that said that. You know, they're unified in pushing for this because it carries out their objectives. They've always hated white people. They are impure, so they hate the purity. They hate the white people. Yep. It's a very old and bitter hatred of us that goes all the way back to Babylon, which we're going to get to, I think, in the second part, because there will be a second part to this, and that will be on New Year's Day. So we should probably round this episode off here and go into the second part of the series in the second one. Dennis, do you want to just let people know where they can find your work before we finish?
Yeah, the Greatest Story Never Told.tv. You can view the movies there, and Communism by the Back Door. Unless YouTube decide to, you know, do another attack, it's going to be up there as well. So, communismbythebackdoor.tv. So, yeah, wishing everybody a Merry Christmas. And I mean Christmas spelt C-H-R-I-S-T, M-A-S. Good luck to everybody.
Thank you very much for listening, and have a very Merry Christmas.
You're tuned in to Radio Aryan.